Writer Eric Davis is a fifth-generation Californian who makes his home in San Francisco. Davis thinks his state provides a haven for visionaries of all kinds. He undertook a personal pilgrimage to visit the sites of California's astonishingly diverse religious visionaries. The result is a book called The Visionary State, a journey through California's spiritual landscape. Americans are so used to thinking of the country stretching from sea to shining sea that we forget California had a long history before the U.S. ever came along.
When America took it over, it was already a kind of Christian ruin with the missionary system in crumbles. And ever since then, it has played this remarkable role in the American imagination, a site of transformation, of transcendence, of natural splendor with Yosemite and the redwood trees. And it's sort of a place where America imagines itself at the edge of its own physical expanse.
It is one of the things about California that I think we can all agree on. There is, what did they used to say? It's a state of mind?
I think it is a state of mind, you know, and many, many states of mind. I mean, that's the visionary state is one way into that deeper mystery. It's a place that is made by visions, by dreams, in crass and commercial ways, as well as sublime and subtle ways. I mean, that's what Hollywood is. It's a dream factory. That's, in some ways, what the internet revolution is about, is a way of organizing the states of mind into a technology of communication and perception.
But the thing about California as a visionary state is that, in many people's minds anyway, it is a kind of altered state of consciousness, and frankly, for some, flake central.
No, absolutely. I mean, I write about in my introduction, when I was a kid growing up, I knew that California was different, that it was the land of fruits and nuts, and we'd hear the jokes, and, you know, it was Jerry Brown was the governor, and we had this sort of moonbeam governor who was practicing Zen. And one of the reasons behind doing the visionary state and really going into the history and depth and complexity of the religious and spiritual traditions here was to kind of show that beneath that flakiness is a really fascinating, deep, complex, and profoundly influential story. To my mind, one of the great stories in American religion.
Well, one of the fascinating things about it is that there are literally dozens of religious movements.
Yes, it's a tremendously diverse environment, and that's one of the hallmarks of the whole tradition, if you will, that I'm trying to capture in the book, is its tremendous diversity. There's a lot of room in the state for people to pursue their own paths, to invent new paths, to transplant religions from other parts of the planet. And this has created this incredibly rich landscape, this sort of psychogeography of various ways to approach the divine. And I did actually visit almost every place that I write about in the book. That became a sort of personal side of the whole project for me, was turning it into a kind of pilgrimage as well as an intellectual and historical research. It really was a way to re-enchant my state and to understand and to experience, really, the different ways that people have used architecture and sacred spaces to implant these multiple visions of the divine.
Well, to get an understanding of this, we ought to talk about some of the specifics. You start with shamanism and the effect of it on, you call them geoglyphs and painted rocks?
Yeah, we started off, you know, partly, if you're going to talk about the sacred history of a place, you have to talk about its original inhabitants. And like many parts of the world, California has a glorious tradition of rock art, which, you know, though we don't really know exactly what it means, seems to indicate that it has some kind of sacred overtones. And by showing some of the remarkable rock art sites in California, which include petroglyphs and pictographs and these geoglyphs, which are these large figures that you can really only glimpse from the air, they're very peculiar, kind of odd figures. We're also sort of saying something about the way that landscape and geography help shape the sacred imagination, which is one of the founding themes of the book, that you can understand a spirituality or religion by visiting the places, by understanding how people inhabited places through architecture or through recognizing certain aspects of the landscape. So it's a really appropriate way to begin the whole story.
You know, I think if you were to ask people for an immediate image that comes to mind when you talk about California and spirituality, it might very well be those missions that were built by the Spaniards, the Christian missions with their adobe walls and the mission bells, even though I'm not sure anybody worships there anymore. Where did they come from? Was it just the Spaniards?
Yeah, when you grow up in California, the missions are the sort of first stop on your, you know, historical imagination of the place, and they continue to function today. Actually, Catholic services are held in most, if not all, of the missions. And they were the way that Spain originally attempted to kind of colonize the place, to claim the land, was by creating the series of missions. But again, by the middle of the 19th century, when the Anglo-Americans showed up, the mission system was basically in ruins, literally. The power structure was disintegrated. The Indians were kind of destroyed already in many ways by the imposition of this system. And it wasn't until the late 19th century that Americans started to go, wow, these ruins are kind of romantic. They're kind of nifty. What's going on there? And so the missions became a way for Anglo-Americans to kind of create their own ancestors, to create their own sense of the past, the way that Greek ruins functioned in the German imagination. The missions ended up functioning in the Yankee imagination. And in fact, they all became reconstructed. So the missions that you visit now are as much theme parks as they are, you know, authentic connections to this Spanish missionary past. A lot of the elements in them, the Moorish fountains, etc., are 20th century creations. So it's a very peculiar mixture of theme park and tradition that kind of founds this fundamental religious imagination of California.
There is a theme running through many of the places that you visit that is this storyline that goes on top of the original heartfelt creation of a spiritual order. You talk in the book about how what we know best about the missions may in fact be a work of fiction, right?
Yeah, that they're sites of imagination as much as they are of kind of living continuity. But that's in many ways what happens in a place like California, a rootless place, is that you need to invent your traditions. And that invention can be kind of a bit of a lie, a bit of a delusion, but it can also be a creative act. And indeed, many of the ways that people that I describe in the book have created their own traditions is really a sign of the intense creativity of the religious imagination, as well as its ability to sometimes fool itself.
The other piece about California that makes it unnatural is the natural beauty of California. Yosemite, for instance, you call a spiritual woman, but you go on and you call John Muir the first great Californian pagan?
In many ways, I do. I think that's accurate. He had an incredible Dionysian spirit, and some of his most exuberant writings are really, you know, passionately pantheist. And while he was motivated in some ways by some core Christian themes, he really left the whole sort of kit and caboodle of sin and redemption and transcendence behind him and really embraced a physical universe, but he embraced this physical universe in a deeply sacred and spiritual way that really kind of founded the sense of a natural mysticism that went on to influence many things in the 20th century, not just paganism or nature mysticism in the New Age, but also environmentalism. And the kind of passion that even today people bring to the topic of environmentalism is infused with a kind of paganism or paganism light that you can trace back to a figure like John Muir.
Of course, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, he's from Calvinist stock in Scotland, came through Wisconsin. We'd like to make our own claim on him on his way to California. But then you go to Muir Woods, and there isn't any question, really, that that is a spiritual place.
Absolutely. I mean, the power of nature in California, even today after all the strip malls and ravagement, is really quite extraordinary, not just in terms of the power of the redwood trees or of a landscape like Yosemite, but in its diversity alone, the range of ecosystems that are kind of all put together in this admittedly rather large state is really quite extraordinary. So it's not just the fact that nature is big and beautiful here, but its diversity is also incredibly informing in terms of the cultures that emerge here. And this was true even in Native American times when the landscape held a tremendous diversity of languages. There was over 100 languages that people spoke inside California. There's something about the place that calls for diversity and transformation.
Eric Davis is a writer, independent scholar, and culture critic. His book is called The Visionary State, A Journey Through California's Spiritual Landscape, and features photographs by Michael Rauner.